This is Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program exclusively on Aspen Public Radio, where we talk with the musicians, composers, movers, and shakers at the Aspen Music Festival and School. Support for summer classical music programming on Aspen Public Radio is provided by the Barnard Fain Foundation. Today we talk with the great conductor Leonard Slatkin, who brings us the Enigma Variations and the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto this Sunday. But you may not know that Slatkin also has been a radio DJ on and off since the 1960s, and he also talks about the importance of radio as a tool of communication. So remember to show your support for Aspen Public Radio at aspenpublicradio.org while you listen to Slatkin here. We'll also chat briefly with pianist Seungjin Cho, who has his debut performance in Aspen alongside Slatkin. And finally, we'll talk with pianist Ari Vardi, whose Saturday evening concert includes 4 9-foot Steinway grands on stage at the same time. First, here's conductor Leonard Slatkin. Leonard, my first memory of you actually goes all the way back to 1973, and when I went to high school, it was George Zell that I was listening to all the time with the Cleveland Orchestra. When I moved to St. Louis for college, there you were, this young firebrand on the stage, boasting that you had just gotten a Vox contract for recordings and that the Big Five orchestras were quaking in their boots and everybody cheered like we were at a football game. You had a style of relating to audiences that I had never seen before with George Zell. Can you say a little bit about what you remember about your early days as a conductor in terms of being, in a sense, a transformational conductor? Because that's how I've always seen you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It's not a short story, but I'll make it as brief as possible. When I started in St. Louis as the assistant, which was in 1968, the then music director here in Aspen was Walter Suskind, who was the music director in St. Louis. He invited me to be his assistant. Well, I got there, and the first thing that happened was a strike. Hopefully not because I went to St. Louis, but a strike happened. And I found myself with 8 weeks of nothing to do. I went to a radio station and did an interview. Mm-hmm. They asked me if I would be interested in hosting a weekly program, which I did, which was on underground radio back then. And from that, I developed at least what I think was a decent style of being able to speak on the radio. It's still the best way to learn how to speak to either small or large groups. Mm-hmm. You can't afford to let dead air go by. Things that you can get away with in movies and television, you cannot get away with on radio. So that was the first important step. I then learned to translate that to speaking to audiences live, which had to be done because in my first year when St. Louis came back to work, I did 83 children's concerts. Mm-hmm. That was a lot, and a lot of talking.
And a lot of talking.
But I was also a champion for American composers, both living and those who had passed. Didn't mean I didn't do all the other music as well, but that became my cause early on, mostly because nobody else was doing it. Mm-hmm. The large orchestras, you mentioned George Zell, not that he didn't do American music, but not much. Mm-hmm. And neither did Schulte or others working in the major orchestra field. So it was ripe, as was at the time, the Russian repertoire. It wasn't being done at that time. We'd shifted to an Austro-Germanic kind of country in terms of our music. So those became signature items within my repertoire. I took them around as a guest and did all that. I got myself ingrained into the St. Louis community. I was just an average guy walking on the street, going to the ball game, shopping, taking the garbage out, all those things. So everybody was not maestro this. It was always, hey, Leonard, how you doing? And it remains that way to this day because I moved back to St. Louis last year, now that I'm no longer a music director with any orchestra. And there's still people on the streets that just, hey, Leonard, how you doing? Good to see you again. It's very sweet.
That's great. And so the late 20th century, when you really come into full flower as a conductor, you and others kind of led the way to a different style, as you might say, of conducting or how you relate to your orchestra and your audience.
It did become a matter of communication. Times were changing. People were looking to spend money in different ways, and money was getting tighter, as it would for the next 40 years. So people needed to find a way to want to contribute to the arts. And the major problem we were facing, and still do, was the system of supporting arts education, particularly in the public schools. I was very lucky. I grew up in public schools all my life with great music programs. My high school had three choruses, two bands, and an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Schickley was our composer in residence in public high school.
At your high school.
And this was not exceptional. It was going on all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually, the arts became less of interest to both federal, state, and city governments. And the public sector didn't want to take that burden on. So we have to fight harder now. And I'm working vigorously with a few people finding a way to get arts education back into the schools as I think it properly should be. So all those things contributed to factors that made it that, oh, the audience is getting older, nobody's interested in the music, they still dress like they dressed 100 years ago, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I believe, solutions for these problems. They're complex and they require a lot of energy and commitment. But now that I'm no longer a music director with any orchestra after having done that for more than 40 years,
mm-hmm.
I have a little more time to devote to projects and ideas such as this. So I guest conduct about 30 or so weeks a year. The remaining time is devoted to projects like writing books, working on this education project.
Mm-hmm.
I write a little more music than I used to write. And I enjoy traveling and seeing parts of the world that I've really not had time to do because of the career.
Mm-hmm.
I came back to Aspen this summer because in September, I will turn 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And Aspen literally was the first place to give me my start as a conductor as a student in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought one trip more to Aspen was appropriate
yes.
for this occasion.
Since you've spoken a lot about the importance of education, one thing I'm a little curious about is, do you see a new role for conductors in the 20th century that is even different from the role that you took on when you were part of the transformation of the role of conductor back in the 70s?
We're in a transition period right now. Conductors are trying to figure out what to do. They are concerned about the way we present the concerts, how the repertoire relates to other things, and that's all okay. I still think the essential format of the symphony concert still holds true, much the same as walking into a major museum and seeing a work of art presented as just a work of art on a wall, perhaps given a different frame. But the work of art itself doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
We update our operas, we update our dramas. To me, mostly it doesn't serve the purpose for which it was intended. We have to always respect the text or the elements of creation that get involved. And from that point, we can move into different areas. So I'm not sure the role of the conductor will change that much other than really being an integral part of the community. After all, most orchestras have the name of the city in their title. One of the only ones that doesn't is the National Symphony in Washington.
Well, our Colorado Symphony
and
here.
The Colorado, actually. But it has the name of the state.
That's
so
true.
It means that the yes. orchestra's first function is to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And or the city. And you have got to establish that as the main point for your orchestra before you start thinking about your national and or international reputation.
Mm-hmm.
This is made a little bit easier by today's media, radio, of course, but certainly internet. I'm a little surprised that when I was in Detroit, we were and still are the only orchestra in the United States that streams all of its concerts for free
mm-hmm.
to the public around the world. And why not? It requires a definition or a redefinition of the word audience. And I argued when we had this come up that that word does not apply just to the people who are in the hall at a moment. It applies to anybody who's listening or watching anywhere. And if you're offering up a product at no cost to the consumer, none whatsoever, why should you have to pay anything extra to anybody for that?
Mm-hmm.
Is an orchestra going to play differently just because they are seen and heard on a different media at the same time they're playing a concert in the hall? And there are no arguments against that.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
go, well, all right, we understand that, but we have contracts that say there are recording fees, there are broadcast fees. And I would go, why? Why
mm-hmm.
should it be any different?
Mm-hmm.
And I've fought against it. I've gotten a lot of negative reaction from musicians, and I understand it because they're used to it being that way. Mm-hmm. But if we are to change, if we are to reach a broader audience and increase the people who listen to the product that we present, we're going to have to make changes like that.
Well, I want to ask you also about the importance of radio. I'll just tell you, when I was 12 years old, I was growing up in a farm town. It's because of classical radio that I learned to love classical music. I heard Vivaldi and I just said, I haven't lived until this moment. Do you have any sense of the value of radio for just people turning the dial randomly and hearing something and they just go, oh my God, that's great?
I think it's not just about the music. The music is always interesting, but you can kind of hear that anywhere that has outlets for various kinds of music. I tend not to define music by genre that much. To me, it's the old Duke Ellington saying, if it's good music, it's good, and then there's the rest,
right?
And we should avoid the rest. So I think the great value of a station like here, or one that exists in most cities, is to be able to give people information about what's going on in a given city, which is something you can't get on most other media. So I think radio as a media has the most impact in terms of telling people what's going on, and even, as in your case, shaping a person's life due to what they played.
And then I guess one of my last questions would just be, I was not able to find you on YouTube as a composer.
Yes,
every time I brought you up, it was you conducting Barber or something.
Go to YouTube and do two things.
Okay.
One, look up Kina, that's K-I-N-A-H, which is a work I wrote in memory of my parents. That's there. Mm-hmm. And the other one I think you can find is called End Games. Those two are available, and I have a new piece coming in a few months, which is in collaboration with other composers for my big birthday coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to be recording a disc of my music.
Fantastic.
This surprised me no end, because it is an area of my life I tend to keep a little on the quiet side.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy composing. All conductors, all musicians should compose, because if we don't, we're simply recreative artists. And in order to truly understand the complexities and difficulties of the compositional process, we need to try it, even if it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just understand what it's like to make something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so valuable. I will be meeting with the composers here in Aspen, but it's not about their compositions per se. I don't tend to want to get involved with their creative process. It's more about the practicalities. Do they actually let us know when a diminuendo occurs how soft they would like it to be? Have they listed all the instruments properly in the instrumentation chart? Have they put in notes that can't be played? Things like that. And it usually comes as a bit of a shock, because teachers don't usually stray into that area, but I do, because I want them to understand that when you write a piece, you must take into consideration the amount and sometimes lack of time there is to rehearse to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make everything as clear as possible on the printed page so that players know what to expect and how to best utilize the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I do enjoy it. I enjoy conveying these things after so many years of experience, and I also enjoy it when I'm wrong. I love it when somebody catches me and I make a mistake, because it reminds me that there's still a long way to go.
Right, right. So what are you going to do on your 75th birthday besides going out to a nice dinner?
It happens on a Sunday, and orchestra seasons have not begun yet, so I don't have to worry about conducting anything. That's good. I'll get up, I'll have a leisurely morning, and then I'll head down to Busch Stadium in St. Louis, where I get to throw out the first pitch
of the game
between the Cardinals and the Cincinnati Reds. I've done this, not on my 75th birthday before, but I've done it often in different places around the country. And it's the only time in my life I actually get nervous. I have no nerves when I go on stage. I really don't. But all of a sudden you're faced with that 60-some-odd feet that you have to throw the ball. And I never realized it was that far until you stand up on the mound. And there's that little glove, which looks huge when it's in person, and you're right near it. But then at that distance, and you really don't want to embarrass yourself, mostly because my son's going to be there. And if I dared bounce that ball or throw it over the catcher's head, or worse, hit the mascot, it's going to be a nightmare. So I'm going to be practicing for the next month.
Right.
Trying to hit the target. And after that, I'll probably go up in the booth, help call a couple innings, eat some stuff I shouldn't probably eat. Mm-hmm. And then some other friends are going to come in, and I guess we'll all have a nice time. But getting out on the mound at Busch Stadium again is really going to be an honor and a privilege.
That's going to be awesome. I'm glad you can do that. Leonard Slatkin, I know you're celebrating your 75th birthday, so happy early 75th, but I will always remember you as that young firebrand on the stage.
Just
when you
keep
were
in your late 1973, and I will too. Gosh, 1973, but I'm going to be 75. I'm only 2 years old.
Yes, there you go. Leonard, thank you so much for your time here and for all you've brought to the world of music, and we look forward to hearing you at Sunday's concert.
Thank you very much.
If you've just joined us, we've been listening to conductor and classical DJ Leonard Slatkin. If you like what he says about the value of radio, become a member of Aspen Public Radio right now at aspenpublicradio.org. Now let's talk with the pianist at Sunday's concert, Seongjin Cho, who has played with Leonard Slatkin before but has his debut in Aspen this Sunday.
So, yeah, it's my third collaboration with him, and I'm going to play Rachmaninoff's second concerto this time.
This is a work, again, that people are very, very familiar with. How do you give it a freshness or a newness so it sounds as if people are hearing it for the first time?
It's a difficult question because this concerto is so popular and so often played by great pianists. It can be difficult to be very unique.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also dangerous to just try to be unique.
Sure.
It can be like a little bit eccentric. So I just try not to listen to anybody's recording before my concert. And I just try to play naturally and just try to like follow the score carefully. And maybe probably it makes the sound, the concerto sounds unique. So I just try to not listening the great recordings, for example, like Bach Richter or even by Rachmaninoff himself.
Even though many of the audience members know the Rachmaninoff very well, some maybe not so much, is there anything you can think of that you might want to suggest people listen for right now so that they can hear it in a way maybe they hadn't before?
I think second concerto for me is like a chamber music. In the beginning, the first movement, the orchestra plays the main theme and the piano just, there's arpeggios. So it's obviously like accompanying the orchestra. And also in the second movement, there is a beautiful flute and clarinet solo in the beginning. They play the main theme, and I played the accompaniment, the small arpeggios. So the communication with the orchestra, I think, is very important for this concerto.
So it sounds like as a listener, we shouldn't just be waiting for you to play. We should be listening to the orchestra.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're more integrated, perhaps, into the music making than in some concertos.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come out here to Aspen Public Radio. We look forward to hearing you on Sunday afternoon with your good pal, Leonard Slatkin.
Thank you.
The pianist at Sunday's concert, Seongjin Cho, who will perform the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto. Now let's talk with pianist Ari Vardy as he sets up 4 9-foot Steinways over at Harris Hall. Ari, let's dive right into tomorrow's concert because it's going to be one of the really exciting ones. I guess you're going to have 4 Steinway grand pianos up on this stage. Am I correct on that?
Indeed.
With an orchestra.
Yeah, with orchestra and 3 fantastic pianists. As for number 4, I cannot say one word because it's supposed to be myself, but the other 3 are fantastic.
Fortunately, box orchestras are small enough that maybe you can fit the 4 pianos up at the same time.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And at the time they performed it in the Zimmermann Cafe in Leipzig, the orchestra was even smaller. I think we are almost reconstructing the size of the orchestra. 1 double bass, 2 cello, 4 violins. But it's fantastic for Bach because we try not to play heavy.
Tell us just a little bit. You said you were going to have some fantastic pianists up there, starting with yourself, but you wouldn't say that. But then after that, after the one piano concerto, then there's a two piano concerto, and then a three, and then a four. Can you say just a few words about the other pianists? Are they all students or former students here at the music festival?
Yes, whatever you say, student, former students, but fantastic pianists. The definition of student is not correct for them. Young pianist, young artist, young with all the passion and love and enthusiasm. But for the one piano, can you guess who is the soloist?
Well, yeah. I'm hoping that's you, I'm guessing.
No. All
it's
three
not.
Of them, they will sit on one bench, and the first one will play first movement, and then he turns to the right, goes around the bench, and the one who was on his left side will move and play second movement. And once he's done, they will turn, play musical chairs, and then the third one will be playing the third movement. So first movement will be played by Ray, and then second movement by Maxim, and the third by Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finish, you know what's going to happen. You will not believe me. This is beyond believing.
They're going to drink coffee in honor of the coffee house.
Yeah, because it was performed in Café Zimmermann in Leipzig for the Collegium Musicum. This was the debut. That is not a bad idea, and we can perform the coffee cantata. But no, what we are doing is even more exciting. Maxim will stay on the same piano. Harmony will move to piano number two. And Ray will take the violin and will join the orchestra and play in the orchestra.
Fantastic. Wow. So it'll be musical pianos all evening, really, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, and also in Leipzig, at the Collegium Musicum, they never played one instrument. Everybody played whatever he could play. And actually, they didn't have listeners as such. They just play for their own pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
They just gather together and have fun. And this is about this repertoire that Bach is Bach. We know who is Bach. He sits on the pedestal and we know who is Bach. But for the Collegium Musicum, he just wanted the joy of music. So this concert is a real summer program. It's for fun. It's for fun. Here and there, second movements are crying and weeping and praying. Mm-hmm. But the rest is really summer program.
Ari, I get the impression that your work, both as a teacher and as a colleague with younger musicians, keeps you young. Because you came bounding in here, you were joking and just noticing everything around you. You remind me very much of the younger musicians that I interview. Are they doing that for you?
Chris, I love music, and I love the younger generation. And if you can combine music with the younger generation, then all your passion and all your love. I'm just coming here from my class, and we had quite a few lessons. And after the interview, I'm going to rehearse with the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
So, they keep me young.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty obvious. I imagine that you learn a lot just from your colleagues as well, the teachers who come in, like Leonard Slatkin and others who come in and work with your students.
Yes, students here in Aspen are privileged to meet some creme de la creme of the world, the global musicians.
Mm-hmm. When you're not teaching, when you're not playing, when you're not preparing for a concert, I know you've been up here for many years, and I'm just wondering if you have some favorite activities that you enjoy every summer up in Aspen that are not necessarily musical.
Yeah, the first activity I enjoy here is waking up very early. You know, in no other place in the world I will enjoy waking up too early. And I hate the alarm clock, and when I have to catch flights, that happens very often, then I really hate it. This part of the profession I really hate. And here I live in Snowmass in the condo, and I wake up by myself at 5 o'clock, maybe. It started by jet lag, and I keep it. And believe me, Chris, it's the morning, and to see the deer coming to drink. One day I saw even a fox. And and the birds, and they start singing, and Mother Nature, and then take a stroll, take a walk in the morning. So if I really want to understand why I'm coming here every year, I would say that 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
5 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's still slightly dark, but over the mountain in Snowmass, you can see like the new day. It's like, you know, Grieg per Gint and all this fantastic morning crescendo.
Or Daphnis and Chloe.
Yeah, Daphnis, like sure. Mm-hmm. Or the Ravel cadenza in the piano concerto or whatever.
Do you also play any other keyboard instruments, harpsichord or anything, or fortepiano?
Harpsichord, not, but fortepianos, a period instrument I play, and I even made a few CDs on it. I believe we all should do that for a better understanding of the spirit of the composer, and also I do my best to expose the student to the period instrument. And if I'm asking myself, is we have some progress in the teaching, in the pedagogy, in the playing of the instrument today in comparison to my youth or to the older generation, I would say, I don't know the answer, but in two fields we are better. One field is that we know all the manuscript, the handwritings, we have access to this, and we have access to the period instruments. So once we not only read about them in books, but we try them with our own fingers, then we can know better how to do it on the modern instrument. It must not be that I play on the period instrument, only I learn from the period instrument how Mozart meant to write and how can I make the transcription to the modern piano.
So when you're teaching, I'm sure you encourage the same of your students to try to broaden their horizons.
Sure.
And I suppose that some of them want to even play the harpsichord.
Yes. It's not such a terrible crime, though I really prefer the piano, and I must even say, I know that some of my colleagues would be angry that Bach concerti that were written for four harpsichords sounds much better on the modern pianos. I believe that the fullest meaning of this composition could be reached on a modern piano, as much as Bach's Chaconne for the solo violin with the arrangement of Busoni for a piano really get not a better meaning, but a rich meaning as much as the original version.
And finally, I just want to say, as far as Bach is concerned, I know that there are performers that have actually said to me, every time I play Bach, I wonder why I bother with anybody else. I wonder if you have a very, very special love for Bach yourself.
Of course. And as much as I love to come every year to Aspen, I come every year to Leipzig. And I have my place there, my hotel there, which is exactly halfway between Thomas Church and St. Nikolai Church. And I can see just how Mr. Bach goes to town. You know, I can follow his roots. And I feel I get a little bit closer to the spirit of Bach. And the spirit of Bach is amazing because, come to think of it, if we take Schubert and try to give it to the swingle singers or to those groups, it will not sound well, though Schubert is so vocal. But Bach, somehow he accepts everything with smile and he welcomes everything. And as I mentioned, he sits on his pedestal and smiles to us and he say, my children, look here, I know my place and I know your place. You want to play me on modern pianos? Go ahead. You want to do that? Go ahead. Yeah. Why not?
Right.
Just enjoy my music.
All right. I am so glad you made time between your teaching and your rehearsal to come out here to talk to us at Aspen Public Radio. We greatly look forward to tomorrow's concert. For some of us, it'll be the first time in our lives seeing four Steinway Grands all going at it at the same time. This should be a lot of fun.
Thank you, Chris. It's been my pleasure to be here.
We've been talking with pianist Ari Vardi, who directs and performs at an all-Bach concert with four pianos and four pianists tomorrow evening at Harris Hall. This has been Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program exclusively on Aspen Public Radio, where we talk with the musicians, composers, movers, and shakers at the Aspen Music Festival and School. I'm Chris Moore. Support for summer classical music programming on Aspen Public Radio is provided by the Barnard Fane Foundation. You can listen to previous interviews on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting at KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale.